Hi, I'm Jamie Waxman, and welcome to the Hot Socks Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at J-A-M-Y-E or check me out at jamiewaxman.com if you're like, who is this person that's talking and why should I listen? This is the podcast where we talk about sex, dating, relationships, meeting, mating, and all the icky stuff in between. Today, we're going to talk about meeting a partner. Barry Selby is a relationship coach. He calls himself the Passion Consultant, and his website, which is romanceblueprint.com, is there to help you learn how to avoid repeating the same mistakes in romance again and again, and how to actually fulfill the healthy relationship you believe you can have while still maintaining the rest of your life and your career. So who is he and why should we listen to him? Well, he says if you relish rocking romance, that he's the go-to guy. I met Barry a few weeks ago while doing a show here in Los Angeles called Love and Sexetra, and I was curious to learn about what it is he does and why he does it and why I should believe that he can help me break my own romance, my own problems in finding partners, which I'm starting to realize what those problems are. A big one for me, we'll talk about today, is that I like to be with people, or have been in the past, with men I like to fix. And why is that? And then the other day, I think I came to a good answer for myself, which was because I didn't want to look at the stuff I needed to fix in me. So let's talk about who we attract and why we attract them with Barry Selby, the Passion Consultant. He can be found at thepassionconsultant.com. So Barry, welcome to the Hot Socks Radio Podcast. How did you become a Passion Consultant?
That's a very loaded question.
Or what is a Passion Consultant in your terms?
That might be a better way of putting it. For me, a passion consultant, or the reason why I am a passion consultant, besides my coach calling me that, is that I'm very passionate about healthy relationships, about people living their fullest expression in life in general, but also in being authentic, honest, passionate, powerful in their relationships. And it stirs my passion to do that.
And how did that become your passion? Or was it through your own relationship that this became your passion?
It was largely through my own, I hate to use the word, but the term dysfunction gets used a lot. But basically, I didn't do relationships very well over my own life in a lot of ways and realized that if I knew better, I would have done better. And so if I can help other people be more effective in their relationships, they'll be happier. So it became sort of a vision of what to do.
So when you say you didn't do relationships well, what are some, because I'm sure the mistakes that you made or mistakes that we all make. So what are some of the mistakes that had you thinking you weren't doing so well in relationships, besides, I guess, the obvious outcome, right, that they don't last?
Well, that's true, yes. And I was going to say, I thought mine were unique. No, it was funny. Just an example, I was in conversation with a friend of mine yesterday. She talks about how she grew up in a very dysfunctional family that parents were divorced when she was very young. I come from a family where my parents are still together after over 50 years, which is unusual, I know. At the same time, I love my parents. One of the things that I was aware of looking back was they never really argued in front of me and my brother. And that really didn't teach me tools of how to resolve arguments because I never saw how to do it. And so my early dating life was very, I mean, in some ways it was almost comedic because it was wonderful to get together with a woman, we'd have a great time connecting, a great, wonderful time. And something would create discord. It could be something simple. But when an argument happened, what I would perceive as a disagreement that blew up into an argument, because I had no skills, literally no skills to handle that, I'd walk away. And that happened for a few years. And I was literally unconscious to the fact that I didn't have the skills. And looking back, it's almost amusing, but that was the thing, one of the things that made my life, or I should say my romantic life, not the ideal.
So you're unconscious to the fact that you don't have the skills to work through certain styles of communication or arguments or whatever, but how do you become conscious to the fact? How do you even become aware of what you're lacking in your life?
Well, there were two things. One was, for me, clearly, I got a hint because I was looking around going, okay, why is nobody else dealing with it like I am? Must be another way. And that was probably what spurred me into my own sort of self-investigation and taking a journey into relationship, not relationship, sorry, into self-discovery and human development, personal growth, and doing seminars and reading books and learning about the human dynamic, because I realized I had a fairly, at that point, I wouldn't say a narrow focus, but it wasn't a very wide view of what was happening in the world.
Did you ever talk to your parents about like this, how their relationship affected your relationships or lack thereof?
I've not said it to them in a direct way. I mean, I did mention to them several years ago. I mean, they're in the 80s now, so that sort of conversation is not quite top of mind right now.
Sure.
How they're doing, you know. But I did talk about it a long time ago, and that's really the piece that healed things for me, because I was so grateful, because we didn't have a lot of conflict in our family, obviously. And so that is a double-edged sword. I guess my point is to illustrate there are two sides to the coin.
Right, of course. Well, I know a lot of people, actually, men my age especially, who, well, not a lot, but I can think of a couple of friends in particular, where they can't really find relationships because they believe that their parents' relationship, which is not what I think I was hearing you say, but they believe their parents' relationship is so ideal that they can never have that. And so they go into these patterns of never finding something for themselves as a result. Right.
And that was the thing for me, was that also the ideal in front of me, because my parents were so together. Now, my parents' relationship is not the one I would like to have in terms of how it works together, but their longevity is admirable. And because I was the firstborn for quite a few years, I was very caught up in the vision of I must find the perfect one that I can live the rest of my life with, which I'm sure is not unusual.
Right. But there is no such thing as perfect, is there?
Well, there's perfection in the imperfection, if you want to be spiritual about it. But the truth is that it isn't about being perfect. It's about being authentic, is my term I use a lot now.
Mm. So you discover in yourself that you are not, you are lacking a bond, a communication bond, to be able to sustain a relationship. And how do you go about working on this? I mean, realization is one thing, awareness is one thing, but action is another.
Indeed, it is. One of the instances, frankly, was a relationship I was in. My girlfriend was wise enough to sort of almost grab my hand before I walked out the door and say, we can get through this. And that I'm forever grateful for, because that was a wake-up call for me that there's another choice available to me. And this is back in my late 20s, early 30s, so it's been a while for me. And that was probably one of the most fundamental gifts I had for so long in relationship, about having the recognition that there was another choice. And yes, I'd done some work at this point on my understanding of psychology that had really, for me, been absolutely, they were really nuts and bolts tools that made it easier for me to understand the human dynamic for myself and what triggered me, and how to not only respond to that, but also be accommodating to my partner, who may be in their triggered state as well.
So you said that she said, we can get through this. And what did you guys do to get through it? Did you get through it?
We did, yes. I don't remember what the issue was back then, but it was what basically was driving my heart. It was shutting. Basically, what was literally happening was my heart was shutting down, because I didn't have a way to understand that an upset didn't mean you couldn't love. And it was literally rewiring my circuitry, because I realized that I loved her enough that whatever needed to happen, we could get through to the other side. And that was transformational for me.
You bring up another really interesting point around love, or at least what I heard you say did, where I think I've dated guys who are like, I know when I meet the person that I'm going to be with, it's going to feel like this. Love is going to be, you know, surprising and arousing, and I'm going to know from the minute I meet her that she's the one. And where do you think we get this warped vision of love, or is it a warped vision of love?
We have a presumption of being warped vision, definitely, I understand. Well, to be blunt, a lot of it is Hollywood, because, yeah. And also there's a fantasy that people live in, hoping it will happen, but truth is that love is for me a deepening experience, and there is definitely confusion in some groups of people in peer groups where love and chemistry get confused.
Mm.
And, you know, and the thing is, how it's going to feel? Well, there's always different flavors of chemistry I have with a partner. I know from my own experience and with my clients. And the depth of love, sometimes people misconstrue or rather mislabel. And it's really the chemistry that's showing up, giving this wonderful feeling or this you know, the butterflies inside or the excitement or the arousal and that sort of thing.
So I liked that there's a difference between love and chemistry. Can you...
Yeah.
Can you did mention the butterflies and the feelings. So what is the difference? Like, how would you define love versus chemistry?
Well, it was one of my teachers from many years ago talked about I love this one. It's that basically chemistry lasts about 3 months. Love lasts a lifetime.
Mm.
And in between that is the mental relationship and the emotional relationship, and there's different components. But beyond that is that chemistry is something that is very transitory, because what it's interesting about chemistry can fade and can be rebirthed again, can fade and be rebirthed again. Whereas loving is the connection between the two hearts, the two souls, the two people that can transcend the physical romantic relationship. And so there's different flavors of love that are more the friendship loving, friendship based, or the lusty lover level. There's different parts of love. So chemistry and love are different.
Yeah.
Simple. That I can describe, and there's more. I mean, there's a lot more to it because you write books on both of them.
Of course, lots of books. So let's get into what you do and how you actually started. You said that you had an awareness through relationship, and then how does one become a passion consultant? I mean, what is your background?
Okay, I was like, because I don't have a set path I can teach people to be a passion consultant.
I mean, for you, how did you become?
Right. Well, I've been, I would say, heavily immersed in the personal growth and training and seminar business for 27 years now. So it's been a part of my life for a long time. And included in that journey is I studied spiritual psychology and have a master's degree in that. I've been licensed as a spiritual counselor for 11 years. And I have a very wide skill set with NLP and with other forms of psychology and personal growth, and basically just school nuts and bolts tools that help people and help myself become a functional world in a more fulfilled state. And the passion consultant, I mean, it's really, really a calling card, but there's no, like, sets that you get to. It's about being passionate about life, passionate about yourself, passionate about love, being passionate about what's important to you. And frankly, I wish everybody was passionate about their dreams and their desires, because I'm aware of this in this society, in the Western culture, there's a lot of apathy, which is really the antithesis of passion to me.
Mm.
And so passion is not unique. I got the call of the mark on passion. It's more that the more people wake up to the passion they have that lets them get up in the morning and go work out and kiss their wives or their husbands and go play with the dog and play with the children and go out and make a difference in the world.
How do you ignite that in people, or I guess the people who come to you are seeking it out already?
Well, that's the good news. Is the people who come to me usually are coming to me because they've either hit a dead end and they know there's something better, they just don't know how to get there, or they're on their way to that and want to really, really step up in their game, step up in their way of living, in romance in particular, because that's my niche of where I'm working, is relationship. And for me also, it's where, and that's the program we created, was to really help people who felt there was something missing or felt that they weren't getting, they were going down the wrong road, and they knew that I could help them get to the right road. And that's really the sort of the pivot point where I can guide them.
I see on your website, which is romanceblueprint.com, that you work mostly with women, or do you work with men as well?
My audience primarily is women. I do it with men, but to be honest, men are not seeking me out as much as women are. So it's really about the audience. If more men were coming to see me, I'd work more with men.
Why don't you think men are seeking you out?
If I may be blunt, because I'm a man, we aren't as willing to open up to new learning and growing as women are. That's a simple statement that we are, as men, we are generally, as a species, we're generally thick-headed in some ways, and we are set in our ways to a large degree. You know, we know what we're doing and that's it. Whereas women tend to, and again, this is a generalization, so bear with me, women tend to females model life, and they love to expand and grow and explore things which men don't do as much. Yes, physically men do a lot, but they go back and don't do things. But it's the internal journey, which is rarer for men to discover and to explore.
It's true. When I teach workshops, men workshops where you're encouraging men to come to learn more about sexuality or sensuality, it's much more difficult to get them to come because it's kind of like asking for directions. Again, a generalization, but if you don't have to do it, don't do it. You know, you'll figure it out on your own, which is really difficult. And I was saying in my introduction earlier that I realized, for me, I had a huge epiphany a few weeks back on my own patterns in relationship, because until we see these patterns, even reading your website and listening to what you were saying on your video was, you know, until we see these patterns, you know, we continue to repeat them. I have friends who have been in a relationship where, like, one day the guy just abandons, like, stops calling for no reason on more than one occasion. And I say to that, like, to that particular person, what are you asking for in your life that you keep getting this? Because that's a big part of it, is that it's not that, oh, poor me. I mean, I don't feel that way about myself. It's not, oh, poor me, why can't I find the relationship? It's, I keep bringing these other relationships into my life. And why is that? In my particular instance, my big issue is I realize I date a lot of men who need the boost, not need to be quote unquote fixed, but do need to be fixed or need to fix themselves and find it in themselves. And what I do is I come in and say, I can help you. I want to do this. We can do this together. And then I realized what I was doing was not looking at myself and what I needed to do for me. Like, I was just seeing other people's issues, obstacles, problems, and figuring that's, oh, let's get involved in that or something like that. So so that's been a common pattern for me. Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think that it is when people come to you that they come with a pretty particular set? It's not like all over the place. Like, we usually have a few things that if we could really hone in on, we would understand what our significant obstacles are.
I'm just going to get to the core of that question. For me, what I'm aware of with the clients, and that's why the program we created, is that usually we find there are one or two or three predominant repeated patterns we go through. And I call it like Groundhog Day experience in relationships, where we continue the same thing again and again. And the faces change, but the same patterns show up. I'm like, okay, what's going on? And what I'm aware of is that we usually have one or two predominant patterns that, to be honest, and this is the deeper, scary part, as it were, often goes back to our parental relationships. Either if they were there or if they weren't there, we become ways of being that we then incorporate into our relationships going forward. So the abandonment one, for example, I mean, in one instance, I have a client whose father was at work and was never around, and the loving she wanted from him never showed up, so she kept drawing men to her who were never around. They get together in a relationship, and suddenly they'd be off on a trip, or they go to work, or they're just shut down. And she kept repeating the same cycle because that was the way she was wired for loving. That was not what she wanted, but was running subconsciously.
So what are some of the other, are there general major obstacles like abandonment that are pretty common for the blockage of dating?
And there are a few main ones, although there's not just those, but certainly like abandonment, control, victimization, savior. I mean, these are all psychological archetypes too, but there are so many different pieces of the puzzle where people are tending to repeat those patterns again and again. You know, there are women, basically, I'm aware of working with them. And men, and now I can say this, men deal with patterns too. It's not like women only, but men do as well. For example, a pattern would be where one partner is always being the victim of things and needs to be saved, and the other partner is the one that's always doing the saving, and they just get together because they have these dovetailing patterns that lock in together.
I think that's me. That might explain. But the awareness portion for me has only recently really figured itself out. So I feel actually on a very powerful path forward. You said you have a degree in spiritual psychology, and I'm just curious, what actually is spiritual psychology?
Uh-huh. Well, the postgrad program it really taught us, and I've owned it really, is that Ella, we are, in global term, spiritual beings have a human experience, which is a very ethereal terminology. But the truth is that we are not just our human physical body. And that's the starting point. Recognition of that means that when we're working with clients or seeing somebody else, that person is also a spiritual being having a human experience. But they may, in fact, be wearing such a strong mask in the human form, they're unaware of that, or they forgot that. And so as a coach, as a counselor, or coach, or as I brand myself, a consultant with my clients, my job is to help them remember who they really are in a very loving way and also in a very roundabout way, because our issues show up on the human level. And it's not to ignore them, because I don't do spiritual bypass, and we're not in favor of that at all, where we think everything's good and everything's fine. It's about the fact that we are spiritual beings who are living in the human world, and so our issues that show up are things we can work through, but the reality is we're bigger than that, so we can go through them. Nothing is insurmountable.
What is spiritual bypass?
Spiritual bypass is a lot of people who are in the new agey sort of thing and the feeling good thing. It's a sense about the fact that it's all about, let's just feel good. And because we're spiritual, because we're spiritual beings with souls and human experience, then nothing in the human world matters. So it's kind of like, don't be invested. It's almost that so detached that it's almost aloof and isolated. And spiritual bypass basically means when someone's angry, rather than deal with their anger or upset, they're going to go, it's all fine, I'm fine, and they stuff it. And that creates upsets physically.
Yeah, I feel that I've noticed that a lot in people when it's like, it's all good. And I'm like, you know what? Sometimes it's not all good, and that's okay too.
Right.
So I noticed on your website that you have a program where if people subscribe to it, do they receive books? How does working with you work?
Well, there's a few ways of working with me. I have a 90-day program, the Romance Blueprint, which you mentioned earlier, which is a self-guided program for women. This one's for women because, simply put, the program contains a lot of feminine practices that men wouldn't benefit from. So in the work, there's lots of work for women in there. It's for them to walk step by step through the 12 weeks. And it's all done by email through there. They get in their inbox every week a new piece of the program sent to them.
And so they have homework to do?
Well, I think using that term.
Yeah.
They have practices to do, let's put it that way. Spiritual practice. They have their own personal practices to do.
So, like, could you give an example of what maybe you would, what one of those practices might be?
Certainly. Let's pick one of those, because there are 38 of them. One of the practices, for example, is, and this is for women who love this one. Let me back up a second. The overarching thing I teach in the program is that there are three main aspects that we can grow, that if we resolve and we get better at, our relationships will transform. One of those is, as we mentioned earlier, about releasing the past, because if we keep dragging the past into the present, nothing changes. So I have in the program these three core practices through every week. One is to resolve step pieces from the past. The second one is to really embrace feminine fulfillment in the present moment, because I'm also aware that women, and men do this too, tend to look outside themselves for fulfillment in a relationship. And what happens, it creates a codependence and a need, which can look actually not very attractive. So what I've got in the program, getting back to an example, are practices through the 12 weeks in this particular practice around fulfillment and feminine practices. One of them is, simply spark treatments. And what I've actually put in place is for a lot of women, especially women who are professionals in the business world, they forget to take care of their feminine energetics. They're always about getting the job done, and they may go get a manicure once in a while. But to actually go and sit in a spa and be taken care of and allow the feminine in them to become fluffed up and nurtured is a huge transformation for them. So there's one of those in there. There's a lot of other pieces too. So these aspects and these parts each week are very much to reshape their lives and reshape their history and their future and their present to become a whole new paradigm for what they want in a relationship.
So you really take the focus away, you know, as a passion consultant, you think of working on relationships, you take the focus away of working on the relationship with others and first bring it to working on the relationship with self.
It always comes back to working with yourself first, yeah. I'm sorry to say that, because some people go, no, it's always them. Well, no, it's not. It is about starting with yourself first.
And then from there, do you encourage women to, how do you encourage them to go out and meet others? Or is that not, you leave them with the tools they need, but not the... but not like you're not a dating coach.
Well,
or a matchmaker.
Right, and it's interesting to say that matchmaking and dating are such interesting and loaded terms. The whole dating term is something that Alison Armstrong, is one of my teachers, talks about in her PACS program. The dating is a masculine practice because in the difference between men and women in a natural, authentic state is the masculine and the feminine. The masculine is a hunter, and the feminine was more of the gathering type and the collector, and the nurturer and the hunter. Basically, he's always sorting out targets, and it's very blatant. That's what men do in dating. Men are going, are you the one? Are you the one? Are you the one? And the truth is, when women do that, they're wearing a masculine persona. See, men do they decide they want this woman. But the woman ultimately is the one who says yes. She's the one that makes the final choice. And women need to remember they have that power. That it's their choice to decide if they want a relationship or not with certain people. And so my core program, the Romance Blueprint, is about preparing for that relationship. And then I do have some extra pieces and some pretty powerful guidance and coaching about relationship attraction and how to create that, what they want. Because women are not meant to go out in the world and find their relationship. That's the masculine energy. Well, their real energy is to become such a beacon that they draw to them suitable men that they can then choose from.
It's an interesting way to look at it. I haven't really thought of it that way, that, you know, it's not exactly what you're saying, that, you know, women wait around and the men will come to them once they're ready. But it is something, because I feel, you know, there's certain things with women, like a biological clock that a guy doesn't necessarily have, that makes them put out a different air and energy. Right. And then, of course, that scares everyone away. And then when they're not, you know, settled in where they're at in life. Or maybe that's just me talking again.
Well, see, the biggest piece of the I'm found with working with women, because most of my clients, generally in the women clients, are, I would say, professional, mature women who are probably age range 30 to 45, 50, even who've been in the business world for a while. And what they've done is they've sublimated their feminine energy to be a business person. And they put on this mask and this format to succeed in the business world, which is great. But when they come home, they don't disengage it. So going out to the clubs or to bars or to social arenas, frankly, I'm a big fan of people going out doing service projects together, because you get to see people's hearts in those environments.
Doing what kinds of parties?
I'm a big fan of people going out doing service projects or things like
that. Oh, service projects, yes.
Oh, yeah, because the truth is, when you do things like that, it's not about pretension, about dressing up nice, or about how much money you have. It's about where's your heart. And that, for me, can be the most amazing gift to show somebody else your heart in that environment, where people then can see each other, I'm going to say naked, but in an authentic way.
I like that. That's a really great idea. It's always like, I feel like when you go out and you meet someone at a bar, you're already meeting them in a different environment that breeds a whole different, well, they probably like to drink, and it could be about partying or whatever. I mean, obviously, generalizations. So where you go to meet people also gives you an idea of the type of person maybe that you're meeting.
Well, I think it's also the environment it presupposes certain things. You know, clubs and bars tend to presuppose that, you know, that hooking up is easier, which is not the truth. But people think that, especially men, they think that's easier there.
Well, alcohol is a good social lubricant, for sure, at times. But you're right. And so where are you in your process now for yourself? Do you feel that you have all the tools? Are you in a relationship?
I'm not in a relationship currently. My focus has been, and this is something I learned from my male teachers. I've seen great people teaching me in my life. I'm grateful for that, so passing on those gifts. I've been single as I've been creating my business, and this whole focus of the passion consultant has taken a while to get on its feet, and now it's got wheels under it. It's moving forward. I'm now in an available space to create a relationship, because I also got clear that until I had my structures in place, my emotional, mental, physical, and financial structures in place, I wouldn't serve a woman well until I had those working for me. And that was one thing I didn't realize. I should say, one thing I was aware of that I didn't want to sabotage was by attracting somebody into my life when I wasn't ready to fully support them and be in relationship with them.
That speaks volumes to me, and that's so important, I think, for anyone to understand, is until you're in the space for yourself, you can't be in the space for it. You can't hold space for anyone else, really.
Right.
So romanceblueprint.com is your website, Barry Selby, and you're a pleasure to talk with. And there's so, I mean, even just scrolling down the page, you learn a lot about what the steps that it takes to find what you want, including the release, the embrace, and the vision. And, you know, vision boards are very powerful for some people. I've been writing a list of what I'm looking for in a partner. And every time I meet someone that's everything on that list, except I forget something, I'm like, oh, yeah, you have to be really clear about what you want.
Yes, indeed.
And that's really...
a couple of things I'm going to say. In the Romance Blueprint, and actually that's not the main site, that's the page for that program. I actually have the main site is thepassionconsultant.com.
Thepassionconsultant.com. Thank you, yes.
Yes, and the thing I'll say is the Romance Blueprint has in it, I mentioned the two tracks of healing the past and embracing the present, is also creating the vision of the future. And the vision board is powerful, but it's, for me, the starting step. So it is week one of the program. So by week 12, it's a whole other ball game because, as you said, you discover as you go along how suddenly you really meet someone and go, oh, hang on a second, I need that in my vision board now. And what I do with my clients in this program is each week through the 12 weeks, they step into the vision board and move into the future, what they're creating. And as they go into the future, the feeling level, they'll discover to themselves, oh, I realize I want that now. I need this as well. And it creates a very refined vision board, and it also creates a very magnetic state that attracts to them what they want.
That's very important, to attract what you want.
Yes.
So thepassionconsultant.com is the main website for Barry Selby. And I think that any person, I know women will, like you said, be more attracted to this because accepting of help seems easier. It's a generalization. Yes. But any person that is looking for help in finding out how to grab that right relationship could really benefit from speaking with you. I know that it definitely triggers things in me as well. So continued success with your work, and people can find you at thepassionconsultant.com. Can they find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter under Barry Selby.
Barry Selby, and that's BarrySelby. Yes. And you can find me on Twitter at JAMYE. Thank you, Barry, for being here with me, and I wish you lots of passion in your life.
Thank you. You're welcome. And I wish you the same.
Thank you so much. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.